Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter on X at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio dial 929 FM or 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, download the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen. You can even listen on demand, stream live anytime, anywhere. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. Glad that he is with us. You can follow him on Twitter on X at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you. How was your holiday?
It was very indoors.
Same.
I cannot recall Memorial Day this much inside with all the rain that we got, but
and listen, we're still getting.
I still hung out with Tom Cruise for 3 hours on Friday night as I saw Mission Impossible 8, the final reckoning. You know what we mean.
Nudge, nudge.
Correct. My company, as he is every Tuesday and Friday on the program, he's the host of VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast. Download, like, subscribe. You know the drill there. The host of VSiN's Betting Tailgate Show, Saturdays, 9 a.m. Central Time. Check local listings. VSiN Primetime. You can follow him on Twitter on X. Also, make sure you download the VSiN Watch app. He's on Twitter on X at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
What's happening, man?
Oh, not much. Just a long weekend, and I thought it was a weekend full of takes. Obviously, we've also had some action down at the SEC spring meetings. I think shots might have been fired, proverbially, I should say. That also means, though,
just means more down there.
It just means more down there. But what it also means is that Tim hit up his good pal, Brett McMurphy, who is down at the Hilton at Sandestin. We'll talk with him about everything going on. Of course, we'll talk about it amongst ourselves as well. Jaleel Willis is a local MMA fighter. He's got a big title bout this Saturday night. He's going to tell us all about it around 2:40. We'll get into the list also during hour number two. And then, as mentioned, Brett McMurphy is going to join us at 3:30. We'll talk SEC spring meetings, the future of the playoff, and more with Brett when he joins us. We've promised Brett that we will not discuss the house settlement with him. That seems to be the one thing that we've agreed that we will not discuss.
I said no promises. My co-host does love to talk the house settlement, and
I can honor all. I will honor his request, because I do think what's happening at the spring meetings is at least more. I think it's honestly more lasting, because, and I was planning on starting NBA, but the biggest reason why I think it's more lasting than the house settlement right now is, Tim, I think Greg Sankey kind of admitted, like, hey, NCAA, we don't need you. This is the first time I've really heard a conference commissioner. I mean, he brought it up in the context of, I've got people in my rooms asking me, why are we still in the NCAA? And to me, that was not a throwaway line. Like, that was in there for a reason.
Yeah, it is. The SEC meetings certainly have been eye-opening from what we've seen down there, and I'm very curious to see where we head from a playoff standpoint come next year.
Yeah,
we obviously
or I don't even know. It sounds like the playoff just in general.
Yeah. So, I mean, you guys live in SEC country. Like, I get it. You know. Congrats on the 13 teams to the college baseball NCAA tournament. You're like minus 295 to win the title this year. The SEC is. You won the championship in basketball. I know they didn't win the title this year in football, but it's a regular occurrence there. It's the best athletic conference in the country, and I think fine with that.
Deepest. I don't know if the top end of each, like, I know you rattled off the stats. I think the difference to me between the SEC and even the Big Ten, which is his biggest rival, is that every school, for the most part, is trying to compete. And when I say trying to compete, they're spending as if they're trying to compete.
Yeah, and look, we've talked the SEC a lot. Obviously, we do it quite a bit during football.
Oh, you forgot to mention 5 of the 8 Women's College World Series.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I mean, adding in superpower Oklahoma helps.
Correct.
That
did help the cause.
Yeah, because now they can claim the last 4 national titles? Because, well, yeah, they're SEC now.
Well, in fairness, the ACC did that with Ledecky.
Oh, sure. Have they really?
Oh, yeah. When she was winning medals in Paris, it was like, yeah, ACC legend.
I love it.
And it was not ironic.
That is very funny. I just, like, kind of back to what we talked about with the 16-team playoff, and I think Josh Pate did something earlier, either on Monday or, I don't know, over the weekend. But he kind of said what I've always said is, are you not going to watch? And, of course, I'm going to continue to watch. But if this were to ultimately happen, I'm not there yet, but if the SEC were to break off from the NCAA, like, what are we doing? You know what I'm saying? Like,
well, I'll say this. I think, because this is not going to be me taking up for the SEC. But what I will say is, I think it is important to note at this point in time, Sankey is speaking publicly, to which I do tip my cap to him, because he's answering questions. Like, he's not avoiding it. When we say the SEC, what we really mean is the SEC and the Big Ten, because they are clearly, to me, functioning as one.
Yeah.
They're operating more like in the shadows.
Yeah, we haven't really heard from them all that much.
I can tell you this, that playoff format, that is not a Greg Sankey idea. That's a Tony Petitti idea.
What, the stupid 13 versus 16, the 14 versus, makes no sense.
The one that the tagline looks like a soccer formation. It's like 4-4-1-2. Like, it sounds like four different defenses. It's like 4-4-1-3-1, 2-2-1 press.
I actually think in the tweet that Dellinger put out last night, I was like, this is what we talked about 2 weeks ago. I think the 4-4-2-2-1 would actually be detrimental to the SEC. I don't understand why the SEC and the Big East, outside of Big Ten, need the reassurances. Oh, we need four teams in. Well, just don't be short-sighted.
Well, so I'm having to connect some dots here, but here's what I think it is. I had mentioned to you, I was always pretty lukewarm on the whole play-in idea of the getting rid of the SEC championship game in favor of the 3-play-6, 4-play-5, like, whatever. Like you said, whenever anyone uses the response, well, you're still going to watch, I always reply, that's not the point. I watch no matter what. Like, I'm Taylor Swift. It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. Like, that's what I've always felt.
Well, we do until we get to the point where we won't. And what I mean by that is, I'm not going to try to compare.
Well, I think it's important to note this. You and I won't, but the masses will. And that's when it becomes a problem.
Right. And, like, look, if I remember correctly, I don't think the ratings were great for Notre Dame, Ohio State.
They
were fine. Right?
Yeah, exactly. They were like 18 million, something like that.
Notre Dame, Ohio State should be the biggest, the most rated game ever, right? And it wasn't, because the season just lingered on. We talked about it, and we're the biggest college football proponents out there, and I'm a huge Notre Dame fan. And I was like, yeah, kind of just lingered, right? The semifinals, as we've talked about quite a bit here, felt like the championship.
Yeah, like that felt
that
like
Thursday
peak,
and Friday were great. You got the build up. And then it was just kind of like anticlimactic, and the game was fine. It wasn't great. You get the big play at the end.
It was
whatever.
Good second half.
Right. But, yeah, the short-sighted nature. So Ross Dellinger put this out. He put out a nice little – I'm a sucker for a little Google Sheets there. Love me some Google Sheets.
Yeah.
And he put it out, and he said, in a top 16 or a 5 AQ plus 11 at-large format, the SEC could get 5-6 teams in. Here's a breakdown of the number of teams by conference finishing in the top 16 the last 11 college football playoffs. So this would just be no 5 AQs, so conference champions, and then 11 at-larges. The Big Ten would have averaged 5.3 teams per year, SEC 5, Big 12 2.4, ACC 2.1, Group of 5 as an at-large would average 0.36, so 4 out of 11, and then Notre Dame would have gotten in 7 of the 11 years. I don't really understand why the SEC and Big Ten, outside of maybe they're thinking of going, I don't know, 10-team conference games, so their schedules are that much harder. But I don't understand the short-sightedness of this whole thing. And so, it would be so much better. Look, I have conceded that we're going to go to 16 teams. Like, it's fine. I was as big a proponent of moving to 12 as possible. I thought the bracket was glorious. I actually love what we've done now, where we've gotten rid of, you know, the Boise State effect, essentially, as their AD came out and said that late last week. So we go to 16, that's fine, but this is ultimately what is, I don't know. I just, like I said, I'll watch, I love it, but I think it suppresses the regular season a bit. And maybe I'm in the minority, Jeffrey, but I thought last year playing for the byes actually was pretty cool. When you saw Georgia play Texas, when you saw Oregon play Penn State, both of these teams were playing for the byes, and now the conference championships, let's be honest, are kind of irrelevant at this point.
So that would be the, I think, like, to me, anytime you hear, when you hear an idea and you're like, that doesn't make sense, I think it's important to reverse engineer it. Like, okay, what are they trying to do here? Because for those that don't know, it's not going to be seeded. The idea right now that's being proposed is not seeding it 1 through 16. Like, you would think of, all right, this is one, you know, a quarter of an NCAA tournament bracket. Like, it's one region. Mm-hmm. One plays 16, eight plays nine.
Because that would make sense.
Right. And that would be clean. Like, we all get it. We are familiar with the 16-team bracket. We know how that works. Easily digestible. Well, what they're proposing now, and I don't have the exact thing in front of me, but I think it's 13 plays 16, 14 plays 15, 1 and 2 get automatic byes to the quarterfinals.
Which, once again, is telling you the 1 and 2 is so important. Therefore, the Big Ten and the SEC, which, let's not be stupid, are going to be the 1 and 2 seed, I don't know, 9 out of 10 times. That way they can keep their moneymaker conference championship game alive. I imagine that is the mindset.
They want to protect.
This.
But I think, in addition, I think there was the idea that the play-in conference games, whatever, the 3-6 and the 4-5 for the right to go to the playoff, it seems to me that that is in addition. They're going to keep the championship game so that if the winner will essentially, the Big Ten championship winner and the SEC championship winner, they will be playing for that automatic bye into the quarterfinal. And
why can't this sport stay out of its own way?
Because it has too many masters.
I mean, forever.
And it's incredibly overreactionary. Like, think about, I've always made fun of, like, football brain. But, like, think about with football brain, where part of the reason why we are in the situation that we're in is that, you know, you tweeted out Ross's spreadsheet about if you use the previous year's data, here's how many teams they would have gotten in and all that. They're never going to say this out loud, but what the SEC, what the Big Ten are saying is that data doesn't matter because that was a different universe. That was not in these conferences that we play in. And what they're really harping on, and Sankey's been pretty adamant about it, is strength of schedule. When you say, like, playing the number one team and then playing the number 136 team, and it averages out to what, like 65, something along those lines. I'm let's see, what we're, yeah, somewhere around 64 or whatever. And then playing 64 and 65 averages out to 64.5, and then playing 30th and 100 roughly averages out to the same thing. Well, what the Big Ten and the SEC are saying is, you're telling us that our schedules are the same as all these other teams, when we know full and damn well that when you go to Oklahoma, even if it's 6-6 Oklahoma, if you go and you play at Oklahoma at night in November, it's a different animal. That's right. Basically what they're saying.
And that's what Kalen DeBoer said, right? He said, you wonder what would have happened if other people would have played our schedule. I don't know, man. You lost to Vanderbilt. Like,
that's the problem. Is that,
look,
like,
we love Diego Pavia more than most. And Diego, you're my boy. But you lost to Vanderbilt with 90... Well, first off, 50% of the stadium was being constructed, so they didn't even have half of it. And then the other 80% were Alabama fans, and you lost. Like, dude, shut up. And all you had to do was not lose to Vanderbilt. And I'll give you the point of going to Norman is not the same as going to Wake Forest. I will totally listen to that argument. All that being said, and I know I'm cherry picking and I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it. Oklahoma lost to Navy in a bowl game. Sorry. It's just, shut up, dude.
Player, a team wearing Oklahoma's uniforms.
Right. Like.
But I am with you.
But their backup should beat Navy, and I love Navy.
Yeah.
But their backup should beat Navy. They lost to Vanderbilt, and that is not a, like, the problem is when you lose to Vandy, who was 6-6, shouts to Diego, but when you lose to Vandy, that is like losing to Northwestern. You're going to have more fans there. It's not going to be a daunting environment. And you lost to Vanderbilt as a, what, 21-point favorite or 24-point favorite?
Yeah, I think it closed at like 24.
And all you had to do, and the same goes for Miami, all you had to do was beat Syracuse. All Ole Miss had to do was beat Kentucky, who won how many SEC games outside of beating Ole Miss?
That would be donut.
Oh, exactly. And all Alabama had to do, just don't have a bad loss. Or don't have two bad losses, because we saw it with Notre Dame. Notre Dame lost to Northern Illinois, a team who won the Potato Bowl in Idaho in December, right? Like, they were a middle-of-the-road MAC team. And guess what? They couldn't lose any more games, and they didn't. All Alabama had to do was not lose one of these three games, Vandy, Tennessee, and Oklahoma. You could have lost two of them, but you decided to lose three of them. That's on you.
And by the flip side, Tennessee,
and you still almost got in. And if SMU gets blown out by Clemson, you're probably still in.
Like, to me, it's like I look at it from the inverse. Like, Tennessee was in a similar spot that Ole Miss and Alabama were in. They had a bad loss on the road at Arkansas. They take another loss to Georgia. But basically, they knew, like, we cannot lose any of these games the rest of the way. They didn't
and they
do
didn't
it.
Lose they get, the, and they didn't got lose in. To Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Shockingly, they didn't lose to Vanderbilt.
After
and
having
you got him with two losses.
A horrible start. Remember, like, Vandy ran a kickback? Like, they were down, like, 17-7, like, right off the bat, and they came back and just dominated the game.
And here's the thing, too. If we avoid the silliness, which is getting these AQs, you still get in, Alabama, in the 16-team field. And so does Ole Miss, and probably South Carolina, right? So you're getting three more teams in. To your point, this sport is so what just happened, it is mind-boggling. Like, it was a weird year where...
Well, you had Super Leagues. Like, we've had the Super Leagues, but this was the first time where you realize the difference between a 14-team league and a 16 or even an 18-team league, in terms of a schedule, is massive.
Look, and Indiana, let's be honest, the reason they got in to the college football playoff, they were a good team, not going to take it away from them. They had some good wins, not great wins, but they had some good wins. They did not have to play Penn State. They did not have to play Oregon. They did not challenge themselves in the non-con. They canceled a non-conference game against UCLA to play Cupcakes. And it worked out perfectly,
well,
right?
I think they canceled a Louisville game, too, or something like that.
Was it Louisville or UCLA? I can't remember.
I think
it was they canceled
Louisville.
Okay. But regardless, they canceled a non-con against a P4 that would have been a challenge, and they curb-stomped everybody else, and they got in at 11-1. SMU didn't really have a daunting non-conference schedule, and the loss that they took to BYU, which initially looked like it was going to be bad, ended up not being bad because BYU was pretty good last year.
Yeah.
And that's just the nature of the beast, and that's how it all plays out. And that's kind of the beauty of this imperfect sport. And I understand you want to go to 9 conference games because there's more dollars behind it, but it's just the short-sighted nature of, if we go to 16, just keep it clean. I don't know how many people in your life you had to explain the playoff to last year and be like, well, technically the top four is not going to be the top four because we've got auto bids, and then you can't have a non-conference champion get a bye. And now it's going to be pretty clean this year, right? It's like, yeah, top 12 teams just get in, and a G5 will get in. And that's pretty much how it all plays out.
I mean, I think, though, for me, it all kind of keeps coming back to, it's like, the other aspect that drives me insane is they act like they're solving problems as if we just fix it this way, it'll be good to go. And it's like, no, you're going to create another series of problems, and then you're going to overreact to that.
Right. And there's going to be a year where the ACC or the Big 12 is not going to have two worthy teams. A year ago, the Big 12 didn't have two worthy teams. And you're going to give them two teams into the playoff when your short-sightedness of this should keep the Big 12, to be honest, down to one team. Or the ACC in some years, down to one team. But because you're so, we need four teams. Why? Why are you, you're ending up to Dellinger's point, you're hurting your conference, in my opinion. Because you're saying we need this when you don't. The math tells you, you don't. And I'll give you an example. So my kid played coach pitch baseball this year. And it was a 13-team conference or division, whatever.
League, whatever.
And the top seven went to the good team tournament, and the top bottom six went to their own tournament, which kind of made sense because the bottom of the – if anyone's got kids, my kid's, you know, seven, there are some really bad teams.
Oh, yeah.
So his team, I think, finished fourth. So they get up to the, you know, the good team tournament. And, you know, common thinking would be one gets a bye, two plays seven, three plays six, four plays five. So we get a text from our coach, and it's like, hey, we're playing the Diamondbacks. And I'm like, what? The Diamondbacks are second. And I'm like doing it. I have a weird fascination with brackets. I love them. Like, I just love making brackets in my head. I don't know why. And I'm like, the two should never play the five. And I'm like writing this down, and my wife's like, wait, trying to think. I'm like, I have no idea how this bracket is constructed. And these morons in this league thought it would be fair for the one to play the winner of 6-7, two plays five, three plays four, and then the winner of one versus 6-7 gets the auto buy to the championship. And I'm like, in what world does that make any sense? And of course, because they're 7-year olds, what happened?
The six
beat the one.
Yeah.
So the six got an auto bid to the championship. Like, what the hell?
Did you ask if the people that wrote this were like, are they college football fans?
Yeah, I was like, is this Greg Sankey? Yeah, is Greg Sankey the commissioner of the Paseo Verde Little League?
I mean, that's the only explanation, right?
Yeah. So I was like, I saw that, and now I'm looking at this, and I'm like, all right, 16 teams, okay, makes sense. And then, well, let's make it a little more complicated. And it's like, and look, I don't mind. I've kind of grown to accept the first four. It's whatever. It's extra basketball on Tuesday and Wednesday night. But the tournament starts on Thursday.
Yeah.
It will always start on Thursday because 64 teams is perfection. It is the perfect bracket in all of sports. They tried to mess it up. They're trying to mess it up more. And I'm not saying the 16-team field would be perfection, but it's really not complicated. Stop trying to overcomplicate this thing. If it goes to 16, just do it the normal way. 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, on we go and move into a championship. But of course, and we say this all the time about the commissioner of baseball, right? What does he not like?
Baseball.
He doesn't like baseball. And I'm not saying that Greg Sankey doesn't like football, but he doesn't seem to care about, and I know they don't care about, just logic and things that make sense.
Yeah, I'm curious. We'll talk about it with Brett during the second hour. I also think, though, like, Manfred has to represent 30 owners that obviously all have competing interests, but it's just 30 owners of baseball teams. Sankey is having to, like, to me, the perfect example. Did you see the Kirby Smart quote that was going around today?
I think so.
Hang on, let me pull it up. Okay, so Kirby today...
Is it about the College World Series?
No, Kirby Smart. The biggest decision that has to be made in college football right now, by far, is when is the portal window? And is there one or is there two? This is according to Pete Thamel. When he brought up the portal interfering with the postseason, he says he was told no crying from the yacht. Okay. I bring that up to say, if you poll most coaches, they will tell you this is the biggest issue in college football. But we just did 30 minutes talking about what is the actual format of the sport? Like, it, to me, it shows the competing interest. Coaches are concerned about roster questions. Administrators are largely concerned about money. Presidents are concerned, I guess, mostly about money. But then you also, it's not like the president and the AD of Vanderbilt have the same interest that the president and the AD of Alabama have. And so Sankey's in this position where he's speaking for all of them, and I don't even think they know what they want.
So this is another Kirby Smart quote today. There's no outcry saying it's unfair when SEC gets 13 of 16 teams in the baseball tournament by using RPI. I have a hard time thinking Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Alabama were not part of the best teams in the country. Like, here's the problem, right? This is the worst possible year for the SEC to do this, because what happened? Tennessee went and got the absolute crap kicked out of them by Ohio State, right? The SEC, remember, we're not far removed from the first three games going, oh, I bet you Alabama would have looked better than Indiana. I bet you Alabama would have looked better than SMU. And then, lo and behold, Tennessee gets absolutely annihilated by Ohio State, and it got real quiet real fast.
Well, no, it became really funny for me to watch, like, the SEC pride was wrapped up in Texas.
And then you're down 20-3 in the third quarter against Notre Dame. But it was our backup quarterback. You told me for 2 weeks that Gunnar Stockton was better than Carson Beck. And then once you play the game, I understand. I'm saying the proverbial you. And then the game gets played as well. They didn't have their starting quarterback. Well, the goalposts are moving here, boys. Like, I'm not saying. I think the SEC is the deepest conference in college football. And I think it has the most talent, and that's been proven year after year when you look at the NFL drafts. Even though Oregon, Michigan, and Ohio State certainly have a lot of draft picks coming out of there. Ohio State, I think, had the most this year. But, like, shut up about South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Alabama. And guess what? If you go to 16, which seems inevitable, they're all getting in.
Well, they're not all getting in.
I think they would.
I think this is what their argument.
This is why you shouldn't have the stupid auto bids.
But so if you have the auto bids, okay, Georgia,
so the Big
Texas,
12 would have.
So Georgia and Texas get in.
Yep. Tennessee.
Tennessee gets in. Then one of Alabama, South Carolina, or Ole Miss gets in, and I think they would have gone with Alabama. Then they would have picked between South Carolina and Ole Miss. Ole Miss had a convincing head-to-head win. I think that's how it would have played out. But I'm not convinced that South Carolina winds up getting that extra spot, because in the end, like, I think BYU would have had an argument at that point.
So if you look at
Miami's probably ahead, like, you know what I mean?
So if you just do it simplistically here with the auto bids, I think South Carolina still would have been left out. So I'm looking at the final rankings for the college football playoff. Alabama was 11th and they got left out, because Arizona State
right.
was 12th. But if we just go down the line and add in Clemson as an auto bid for winning the ACC, I think Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Bama all get in, and BYU's sitting there at 17.
Again, it's possible, but, like, I think their argument would be is they would have left that up. They don't want to leave it up to chance, because essentially what happened was, in their view, and I'm going to be very clear, I'm not defending their view. In their view, the argument is that we tried it your way this year, and you kept telling us it'll work out. Well, it didn't work out. We're now taking matters in our own hands.
What is funny, though, and you pointed this out a little while ago, the SEC right now is taking all the bullets.
Oh, yes.
The Big Ten is just like, yeah, we want the same thing, but we're just going to be over here in Midwest. Hey, oh yeah, we're nice here in the Midwest.
Apparently, they had their meetings out in California last week. Did you have any idea that happened? Because I did not.
No. The only thing that came out of those meetings, the only rumblings really coming out of the Big Ten, and I put up air quotes, is that USC is a bunch of you know what's, and they don't want to play Notre Dame anymore.
It's the University of Spoiled Children, baby. Come on.
Well, you know, we have to go out to the Midwest a bunch. We don't have to do that anymore.
Travel,
that's your,
man.
That's your fault. You guys wanted the life preserver there in the Big Ten. Well, we offered you an extension, yeah, for 1 year, so we could play back at your place.
It's why when everything that I, I keep coming back to the conclusion of all of the hand-wringing, everything. I just think it's getting closer and closer. Because I'm not saying, I want to be very clear, I'm not saying a lot of these SEC arguments are logical and that I think that they're good faith arguments. I think they're doing the move where I think they have a point and then they keep going and then they start contradicting their point, and then they, it's very clear they have talking points. Like they are clearly organized. And the more and more that I hear, the more and more I keep thinking where this, they are just basically announcing, like, we tried doing it your way. We met you halfway. Because Sankey had a, you know, I wouldn't say it was a rant, but Sankey had a very pointed comment in response to a somewhat innocuous question in which he basically said, you know, it was about the good of the game, that comment. And he goes down, he's like, there was no need for us to go to a 12-team playoff. 14 playoff worked out just fine for us, but I did think it was for the good of the game. And I worked very hard, very diligently with a lot of other people, and we came up with a format that we thought worked. All of a sudden, it wasn't good enough for them, wasn't good for the game. Well, then it was good for the game, and it had to be rushed, largely in the form that they had presented. And I just keep thinking that the more and more they keep pointing out, I think they're signaling, like, we are about to leave your asses.
Question.
Yep.
I know we got to hit a break. If Alabama gets in over SMU, are we doing this nonsense?
It's a better question for Brett.
Probably yes.
My suspicion is yes, because the thought would be like, well, the other two should have gotten in too.
Right. Yeah. Forget Indiana.
Correct. Like, I think a lot of this just boils down to is that, like, Indiana shouldn't be in.
I think that, to me, is I'm now just remembering the glory of all the takes from Lane when Indiana got their ass kicked, and then SMU gets smashed, and then what was the middle one?
The middle one was, so we had Friday night was
Notre Dame,
and then we opened with Penn State, SMU, and then Texas convinced
Texas Clemson.
Texas beat Clemson, but that was the best. In my opinion, that was the most competitive game.
I agree. Yes, scores be damned, because Notre Dame, Indiana was not competitive.
Yeah, like that down to down. Like there was a point in the fourth quarter. If Clemson could have scored, I was like, all right, this could be a game.
Yeah, Clemson should have covered. They didn't. But yes, that was the most competitive game. And then the Tennessee thing all week long, wasn't it supposed to be Neyland North and all this?
Yeah. I mean, in fairness to Tennessee fans, they did their part.
Yeah.
It was the football part that was the problem.
Just got absolutely obliterated. It was just quiet on the Western front.
Yeah, it went to crickets really, really fast. All right, we do have to take a break. When we come back, Jaleel Willis, he's got a big MMA fight. He's going to tell us all about it. Also, when we come back during an hour or two, we'll get into the list, and Brett McMurphy's going to join us. Stick around. You're listening to Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Jaleel Willis is a professional MMA fighter. You've seen him in LFA, Bellator, the PFL. He's also got a big headlining. He's the main event this Saturday night. It's the Southland Showdown 2 at the Southland Casino Hotel over in West Memphis. You can get your tickets at attitudemma.com. Jaleel, I'm told that your first fight as a professional happened at a county fair here locally 10 years ago. Is that true?
100% true, man. 100% true. I'm selling T-shirts at the Delta Fair.
At the Delta Fair. Okay, who was it against? And this is the is the Delta Fair the Agra Center?
Yeah. I believe that's what they was calling it then.
And who?
The Agra Center, yeah.
Who, okay, so take us back to that fight versus what 10 years of fighting does. Like, obviously, you've gone through the ringer, but how much did you weigh then, and how much do you weigh now?
Man, I was about 170 pounds then, and I'm about 190 pounds right now, so I wasn't too far from what I am right now. And I believe I can't quite remember the guy's name. I know it was like 30 fights ago, you know, but I do remember he was 11-5, and they asked me to take him on because his opponent actually got afraid and backed out of the fight and never showed up.
I mean, I guess at that point, right, you're just hungry for a fight. You're like, sure, I'll take it, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I guess I was just hungry for a career, to be honest, man. I never fought before, you know, not professionally. I fought on the streets and stuff, but never professionally. And I didn't even ask for any money either. I just wanted something to do.
So how does it work now? Because I obviously, you know, I've had some guys in here and they say, hey, you know, the goal is to get to UFC. Others are, you know, hey, man, I'm just trying to win as many fights as I can. For your career, has it been an end goal? Like, how did you set about when you started getting more serious about the craft? What was kind of the end goal for you?
After I won my world title, I knew that it was just the beginning. I knew things was about to get a lot tougher, a lot more challenging, and I knew I had some big decisions to make. And that's when my agent, you know, he approached me. He let me know I had an offer from the UFC, and I also had an offer from Bellator. And we sat and we talked, and we had this good conversation about how you got UFC superstars and you got prize fighters.
Yeah.
And the more we kind of laid everything out, it seemed like I was more so aligned. If I wanted, you know, I was a prize fighter and I wanted my prize. I wanted to be compensated for, you know, all the blood, sweat, and tears I've been through.
Well, and that's interesting to me because now, like, you know, I feel like it even gets confusing in boxing. You're like, wait, I mean, what belt is this? He says he's got a belt. He says he's got a belt. I have no idea. In the MMA world, now, is it just like UFC versus prize fighting? Because I felt like for a while we had other leagues, other conferences. I don't know how you'd end up defining it. But now it feels like you're either a prize fighter or UFC. Is this me just being horribly uninformed, or is that kind of the way the world's working?
That's the way the world is working. That's the way stuff is monopolized now, and you know it's we got to deal with it. And some guys, it's going to work out very well for them. You know, if they take pride in what they do and realize that, you know, not everybody is UFC superstars. Some guys, you know what I mean, like we're prize fighters. And, you know, if you go to the UFC, I see a lot of guys get, you know, in and out of that machine just as quickly, you know, as they got accepted, you know. So with that being said, and with everything just kind of coming down around it, it's like the UFC is the mecca. And the UFC can pay what they want, charge what they want, and you know, I mean, if you want to be a UFC superstar or UFC fan, you're gonna be there in on it. Like, but you got also other guys who realizing like, hey, you may not be a UFC superstar, but you are still one of the best in the world, and that's when you go and you try to seek the best competition in the world, and that's when you end up in places, you know, like AE France and Europe, you know, just all around.
He is Jaleel Willis, the main event for Attitude MMA at Southland Showdown at Southland Casino Hotel again in West Memphis. It's Willis versus Beard on Saturday night. Okay, but Jaleel, you're from North Memphis, so this is what's always fascinated me, and maybe it's because I was a gigantic wuss. I've always played sports, but like, how does it go from, you know, how do you go from growing up North Memphis to like, I want to be in the fight game, because that's just something that doesn't register to me. I'm always like, I tip my cap to him. It's like, I could never do that. But like, what's your story? How do you get involved and say like, I think that's something I want to try?
Man, you know, out there in Memphis in general, you fighting. Well, back in the day, you was fighting. It's different now. They shooting nowadays. But back in the day, you was fighting. And you just knew. Like, you just had pride in, you know, like going out there, win, lose, draw. You just wanted to, you know, fight and have like somewhat of a, you know, just like a gladiator mentality about you. And they used to transition over into football, basketball. We, you know, neighborhood boxing. Everything always ended up being competitive, but ended up back to the gladiator mindset. And with me, I very quickly seen that basketball, football, and baseball can be out of reach at times.
Sure.
But, yeah, but you got a sport like wrestling where it's all you, and you know, you really can't deny that. And that's where I clung on to. And after high school, I had an opportunity to, you know, just actually take off with something. And I said, man, what's more simpler than just fighting? And that's something, you know, I'm used to anyway. So I just kept riding with it.
So is that where it starts for you? Did you wrestle, like, growing up?
Yeah, I wrestled for White Station High School and Kingsbury High School.
Okay, and so that obviously is going to be a good spot. But, like, is there a trainer or is there someone who spots you early on and says, like, hey, man, I think you can get into this fight game for real? Because, you know, roughly our age, I mean, this is – the UFC had been around, but it still felt like it was kind of – finding its own way. It's not the monster that it is now, but it wasn't a nothing burger. But, like, do you know quickly when it starts to kind of transition from boxing's the number one fight game to you can see MMA coming along? Is there somebody that kind of got you along the way and is like, hey, man, like, let's harness this?
Yeah, man, Todd Hawkins. I call him my white daddy.
Yeah.
He
a great nickname.
He took me in when I was a teenager. And, it was kind of a mismatch. But I had the idea in my head that I was a troubled kid because I, you know, was skipping school, this, that, and the other, to go to the gym. But he always kind of reminded me that that's not normal. You know, skip school and to miss out on all this fun stuff to go to the gym and to try to cut weight. You know, and that's when he mentioned to me that I should give fighting a chance. If, like, you know, if everything failed for me, if wrestling failed, Marines failed, he told me, he always told me I should give fighting a chance. And he took me to my very first fight, BJ Penn versus Diego Sanchez. He took me there, and that was and, like, from there, I remember just me and we watched the show, and I kind of lit up. And I didn't tell him, but I promised myself that, like, hey, if everything do fail, I'm going to give this a try. Like, if he believe in me, I'm going to give it a try. I believe in me, you know. So it started with Todd Hawkins.
What's, like, the last 18 months looked like for you? I mean, where all have you been fighting?
Let's see, I was in Nashville, Paris, and I believe Chicago before that.
Okay, so roughly, or what are we fighting about, every 4 or 5 months? Is that, or is it just, hey, whenever your agent calls and says, hey, we got to fight? Like, how do fights come about?
Yeah, man, it's the name of the game is if you're healthy, you get it while you can. You know? And if I'm healthy, you give me a call every 3 or 4 months, you know, like I'm ready to jump in. I'm ready to fight, because if you don't, you risk a chance of things passing you by. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a business. It's a machine, just like everything else. So, like, that was my deal. I just struck hot. I seen that, people didn't want to fight. People wanted, you know, the world to be moved for them just so they can show up. And, I didn't want to be that guy. I was a guy, I was like, man, you know, I love fighting. I'm here to work. Let's work. Let's make it happen, you know?
Well, this is a question I always have for fighters when they come in. Because you mentioned if you're healthy, take it. Because I totally get that. But how many injuries have you had since getting into the fight game?
Let's see. Broken both hands.
I feel like that's the free space. Every Friday, like, of course you got broken hands.
Yeah, broken both hands. I broke my jaw. Had to have plastic surgery on my jawline at one point. So that's two surgeries on my jaw. A bunch. It's like broken arms. Like probably like 93 torn MCLs. Yeah, it's ridiculous, man. It's that's why when people ask me how camp is going, I just tell them, I was like, man, I'm healthy. So,
well, and, like, to me, like, that's the other thing is, like, the jawline, broken hands, like, all that makes sense. What always blows me away with y'all is how many of y'all just tear your knees up. And I mean, is that, honestly, I would feel like if I'm in camp, the fact if my knee just wasn't hurting, I would think that I feel good. Is that kind of how you're feeling?
Yeah. And that's pretty much how it is, because if, you know, it's so common, dude. I see people straining knees and they try to come back from them, you know. So usually with me, I try to be ahead of the game and just go ahead and protect both of my knees, especially since I'm 33 now.
All right, tell me about the card this weekend. So we're over at Southland Casino Hotel in West Memphis, Arkansas. Again, Jaleel will be in the main event against Beard. Tickets over at attitudemma.com, attitudemma.com. Doors will open at 5 o'clock. First fight will be 6. Do we know roughly about what time you're going to be hitting the ring or the octagon?
Man, if I had to say first fight at 6, I would say I'd probably be walking about 9 o'clock or 8:40.
All right. So how intense has the camp been for this fight?
Man, actually, the camp has been real, real smooth. You know, because it's like our 33rd camp. You know.
Yeah.
We've done it so many times. We just like, man. Like, it's beautiful. We don't got to travel nowhere. We're right here in our backyard. I've been able to shoot up the interstate to Nashville, get a lot of great work in with all the good guys up there. And it's really just been smooth, man. I guess the only thing I can say is how long of a count has been, because at the end of every week I'm having to wait and look at the calendar of like, man, you know, 6 more weeks, 5 more weeks, you know. So that's the only downside, I would say, for me. I'm used to 4-week camps, 6-week camps, and, you know, we're getting right to it. So it's been kind of an anxious feeling having to look at that calendar of weight.
All right, so tell me about your opponent. How are we sizing him up?
All right, man, so this is what I'm sizing it up as. I'm like, that's the CFFC world champion, right? And I'm the LFA world champion. So we got two world champions meeting, you know, right here in the city to put on, you know, one of the best fights that could possibly be. Here's the way I'm saying they're being sized up, though. I believe if he's been watching my other fights, I believe he's kind of going to think that I'm going to be sleeping a little bit, but I don't think he's quite ready for the shotgun that I got that I'm coming out with, you know. So I kind of blast at him full speed ahead, get him out of there in the first round.
All right, my man, we wish you the best of luck.
All right, man, I appreciate it.
That is Jaleel Willis. Again, the fight is the Southland Showdown 2, again, on the 31st. That is Saturday night at Southland Casino Hotel in West Memphis. Again, to get your tickets, attitudemma.com. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Tim's going to rejoin the program. Also coming up during hour number 2, Brett McMurphy is down covering SEC spring meetings. We'll get all his thoughts on everything that has been happening in the world of the SEC and college football and the college football universe, if you will. We'll do all that during hour number 2. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.